Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rochelle, who's here to speak with us about the recent recording and listening blog. Welcome, Rochelle.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. It's always a pleasure to participate.
Yes, it is. It sure is. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And gosh, I am just such a big fan of this recording and listening blog in general. It's just so full of recording and listening insights, ideas, and practice tools. And this recent blog was great. Maybe to get us started, you could just tell us a little bit about the blog.
Well, the blog is about my experience with recording, listening, and sticky content. The content that really grabs your attention, pulls you away from center, really riles ego up and just hard to let go of. And what the blog talks about is just kind of over the years, the process I've developed or meandered toward, and which involves recognizing that it's sticky content and that I really need to dig down deep and practice around it. And the process is basically recording the reality of what happened, not letting ego talk about it, but whatever the event was, the triggering event, just recording the plain facts. And that's important because ego lies about everything, and it can make up stuff and tell you all kinds of stuff about what really happened. And so for me to really get down to the reality of what happened, the facts, without ego's embellishments, helps to listen to that, and it makes it more manageable. And the second, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to reflect a little bit that, gosh, that's just so perfect, isn't it? I mean, there is that sticky content, the stuff that when it comes up, it just grabs us and kind of pulls us into that identification tractor beam or whatever, and it just feels so real, that kind of stuff. And just talking about using the recording and listening tool to, it sounds like, get some real distance from that, to disidentify. And to it sounds like something that you're talking about is really helpful is recording what's true, what are the facts, and kind of pulling that apart from the story that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate creates about the whole thing. Sounds really helpful.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. At least in my experience with sticky content, ego conditioning is talking so much about it that after a while it gets hard to tell what actually happened. It conversates about it. It blows it up out of proportion. Part of my defense about that is, okay, what happened? And I get real concrete about it. Tuesday, we had a meeting, and in the meeting, I said this, and somebody responded this, and this is what they said. And it really takes it away from what ego thought was said, or what happened, to these are just the cold facts of what happened. And that's really important because if I stay in my head about it, ego makes up all kinds of things about what happened, and it's hard to tell reality from ego's projections.
Boy, you make such a great point there, and it's such a wonderful argument for using this great tool of recording and listening, that when we just stay in the head kind of with the story about what's going on, it's really hard, maybe impossible, to pull apart what really happened from, you know, what is the conditioned conversation about it. But when we get it out of the head and onto the recorder, and like you're talking about practicing with, just really sticking with the facts, what actually happened, and kind of separating that from, you know, now what are the voices saying about that kind of thing, it gets a lot more clear what's really going on.
Yeah. And then the next step is really getting out what's going on in my head, what conditioning is talking about, what story it's weaving, and it's ugly. I mean, conditioning is a nasty piece of work, and so let it get it out in a safe place. Let me get that out on the recorder, and it's not pretty. and listen to it, not to listen to it from ego's perspective, but listen to it because then I'm looking for the bamboozle. What's the deep story? What is going on here? Why did this event or this that happened stir up such a reaction? What is going on here? And again, another step of disidentifying. And what I find all the time is, wow, I'm really identified. And things that I'm identified about, I want to be right. I want them to be wrong and me to be right. Or I have to protect somebody because they're not adequate to their life. Or I am clinging to something, an idea, a situation that is transient. And so I'm upset because things have changed. The bamboozle of if this, then that type of thing. So I really listened for that, trying to see what's going on. And once I listen to it, this is really important, I erase it. I don't ever want it to come back in my shuffle list. It is
no need to listen to that story again. You've heard it enough times.
No need to listen to it again. And usually I have to do that story or get that out when I'm moving. It's usually when I'm walking. Sometimes I'm tearful. Sometimes it is really pretty emotional and a lot of energy. But I get it out there, and then I listen to it from a centered place type of thing, and then I erase it. It is not meant to be there. It has to get out of my head, otherwise I believe it. But once it's out of my head and I listen to it, I delete it. Okay?
That's great. It sounds like a really crucial, really helpful step of the process, like you're describing, is to give yourself the opportunity to just really kind of let it rip, kind of uncensored, that practicing the skill of authentic expression, whatever's going on in the moment, just let it happen. And even if it's all kinds of conditioned stories and blah, 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 you just get it all out of the head, onto the recorder, and then you go back and listen from a more centered, disidentified place, from it sounds like a compassionate place. And from that place, you're able to identify the conditioned voices for what they are, and you're able to recognize the bamboozles. And then from that place, I'm projecting it's a lot easier to drop it. And then once that step is done, that recording, you know, it's kind of done its purpose. You don't need to listen to it again, so you delete it, move on to the next step.
Exactly. And the crucial thing about that, for me at least, in my life, I don't know about others, but it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go back to coworkers. It doesn't go back to family, friends. There's this urge to tell the story, but it is inappropriate for a lot of this to tell it to anybody else. You know, it would just further make the situation worse to try and go and tell something to somebody else. It's safe. You tell it to your recorder, you listen to it, you delete it, and it doesn't go anywhere else. And nobody else has to listen to that, you know, raving and to ego's craziness.
Helpful to have that safe place to do that. Yeah, and I love, as you were describing that, what was coming in for me was, you know, we're in a process of ending karma kind of thing. And so to recognize we don't want to kind of create any new karma by pulling more people into the egocentric karma conditioning self-hate drama. We can just kind of end it right here with, you know, getting it out in a safe place in the recorder, and that's as far as it has to go.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
And then once I've done that, then and I've listened to it, I've practiced around it, I've sat with it, and for me at least, this is a process that takes a few days type of thing. But once I've kind of done that and sat with it and that type of thing, then I decide, okay, I've practiced around it. I've identified the bamboozle. I've learned what I can from this. It's time to drop this, to let it go, to end that suffering. And then I no longer entertain conversations inside my head or outside about that content, because continuing beyond that point is not helpful continuing beyond that point is actually continuing and choosing suffering. And so I dropped that. And then I also have to make a plan that if conditioning wants to talk about it again, then I'm going to do something else. That if that's walk the dog, recite the recollection, if that's sing, if that's sit for 10 minutes. But it's you know, it doesn't matter. If conditioning brings it up and wants to talk about it again, then I have to do something different, and I've got a plan for what I'm going to do to help me drop that content.
Gosh, that's so helpful to have that kind of plan in place for when, you know, ego's going to be in there attacking, but just recognizing that after you've kind of got it all out, kind of processed it with the mentor, listened compassionately, there's no more useful purpose for that conversation than it's time to just drop it. And then knowing that, of course, ego is going to want to come in and kind of stir it back up again. So then there's coming up with a plan for how to deal with that when that comes in, and setting an intention about directing the focus of the attention. And then when the ego comes up to try to, you know, breathe new life into the story, it's like, no, I'm going to sing a song. I'm going to walk the dog. That redirecting the focus of the attention. Wow.
So there's a component to it also. Well, you know, it's funny because I was working with some content, and I would, if it came back up again, I would walk the dog. And after walking the dog 5 or 6 times that day, my neighbor came out the house and said, "How many times are you going to walk that dog?"
As many times as it takes. Amen.
Many times. He's like, "How many times are you going to walk that dog?" And I'm like, "Many times as it takes." But the other go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
The other thing is, particularly for content that's very public, I have had to learn how to not participate in conversations or kind of shut down conversations. So there's this big public something that's happened, and everybody wants to talk about it and said, "Oh, did you see this?" Or, "Did you see that?" Or, "What did you think about what happened at the meeting?" And that type of thing. And once I've made that commitment and practiced through it, I try to minimize those kind of conversations type of thing. And, in fact, I just recently went through some content and that involved a lot of people. And every time I go to this place, everybody's like, "What did you think about what happened?" And that type of thing. And I just like, you know, I've let it go, and I've decided to, you know, not linger on it. But I've found that I've also had to kind of help the issue drop, not only for myself, but not entertain it in public, or not conversate about it, or add fuel to the fire, or that type of thing.
Wow, that does sound so helpful. That recognizing, you know, once you recognize that commission conversation for what it is, there's that really kind of firm resolve and that heartfelt commitment to drop the conversation both inside the head and outside the head. How helpful. And I see, Michelle, we're up against our time, but God, what conversation. And,
thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I mean, gosh, it seems like laid out a step-by-step plan for waking up and ending suffering right there. It's just so helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Take care. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lakota, and thank you, Rochelle. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
That was a fabulous
conversation. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I swear, if anybody wanted to, it's just what Lakota said. That was a step-by-step how to end suffering. Anybody who wants to get a little plan to follow, then that would be the one. Just write those down step by step, put it up on the wall, put it on your recorder, go through it every time. You got it. I especially love the, once you've made up your mind not to entertain that any longer, don't entertain it anywhere else either. even if other people want to talk about it, just come up with that gracious way of extricating yourself from that. Yeah,
yes.
Really good.
Yes, yes. I sense that conditioning didn't have much of a chance after that program.
Right. Well, and the commitment. You know, because we know that it wants to just come. You know, you forget about it for a little while, and then, time to walk the dog. gotta sit. Gotta whatever it is. Whoop, I'm out of here. We're not having that conversation. I love it.
Yeah, great tips.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And how are you doing?
Great. Absolutely great. Yeah.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah. It is so beautiful where I live. I tell you, it is so absolutely gorgeous that it's just, it's not possible to be anything but happy.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great.
I think it's kind of that way where you live too, isn't it?
It's beautiful weather, yes. Yes, warm and lovely and sunny and gorgeous.
I don't know. You know, maybe the weather isn't that big a deal for everybody. I don't know. I've been accused of being weather obsessive, and I think it's probably true. But I think it's because of a background of profound depression. And for anybody who suffers from depression, you know, when the sun goes away, especially for extended periods of time, that depression gets that much more difficult to deal with. And so the sun comes out, and for me at least, everything just becomes easier and happier and more manageable. So
yes, I agree.
Yeah,
wonderful. We have some announcements here, Sherry.
All right.
If you have a favorite quote from Sherry's responses in the recently completed Socratic email class, we invite you to share it with Sangha. Please direct the quote to peacequotes@livingcompassion.org so it can be sent out to Sangha through the daily Peace Quotes program.
Hmm.
Yes. Virtual meditation groups are a unique way to enjoy the support and connection of meditating with Sangha. These conference call meditation sessions include a 30-minute sit, followed by the practice focus for the day. A new group time is being added starting this week. For a full schedule of virtual groups, please visit the Virtual Meditation Groups webpage.
Mm-hmm.
The process of fear is how our life energy is used by ego to maintain the ego. Join Sherry and Ashwini in a powerful experience of going beyond the limits of fear at the Transcending Fear Retreat, May 15 through 20 in North Carolina. It's time to break free of the control imposed by egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hate and to practice life's joy.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are like two spots available still in that.
Okay.
It's coming right on up. So if anybody
says,
"Oh yeah, I'm ready to move beyond fear," join us.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, we have the opportunity to practice tuning to life's rhythms as we take care of our spiritual home at the Seasons of Joy Summer Retreat, May 30th through June 4th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. This retreat will provide training in using simple physical activity to cultivate a joyful presence and expanded awareness that makes ordinary life extraordinary. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And for the courageous work of ending self-hate and finding compassion for yourself and others, register soon for the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, June 10th through 17th at the Zen Monastery Peace Center near Murphy's, California. This foundational retreat is perfect for awareness practice beginners as well as experienced practitioners.
And you know, Michael, we have a group of those courageous people at the monastery right now who I think just finished that retreat or finished the, you know, the big elements of that retreat. Yeah. So we'll make a deep gusho to those intrepid souls.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So they're listening right now. Is that what you're saying, Terry?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great.
I think so. If they're not letting them listen, then I'm going to have to talk to those people down there, because I think that that's the way it goes. Yeah, they join us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's courageous work. It's joyful work. It's fun.
Yeah.
I remember there was a ton of laughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Once we realize that egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hate is the only thing that is grim in life, then we can really start enjoying things. Because when things get super serious and grim and gloom and doom and oh my God, then we can know, ooh, I've been nabbed by the nasties. And then we, you know, use all of the tools of practice, many of them laid out just a few minutes ago by Rochelle and Lakota, to turn that around and get back to enjoying this one and only life that we have been given.
Yes. Yes. Lovely. And for these and other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show by pressing *6 and then 1. And one topic and a 5-minute conversation is great.
Thank you,
Mike.
Okay,
I think we're ready here, Sherry.
All right. Sounds like it.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Loren from Connecticut.
Who is it?
Loren from Connecticut.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. What's going on?
I was not expecting to get this. I've just started recently listening to the radio show, so I certainly was not expecting to.
So you're just trying to breathe and get your heartbeat back to where it doesn't feel like you're going to have an attack?
Yes.
That sort of thing? Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're having the right experience, so that's always
great.
Good. Yeah. All right. So we'll just breathe for a second here while you consider. What you'd like to talk about today?
Sure. So I'm coming off a time of just being part of the Socratic email class and a time where I was feeling very strong and practiced and sort of really having direct experience after direct experience of, wow, my life really is my practice, and all the tools are here for me to work with it, and actually finding myself, you know, excited about things to work with. So, and then yesterday, I got caught in a story that the content of it was just slightly different enough than what I had been working with through, you know, my recording and listening practice and the email class, that I was like, nope, this is really the bad stuff. It's here, and it's got to go away.
True. Yeah, this is true. That other stuff is fine. You can work with that because it's not really true, but this is really true, and now you have no choice but to suffer.
Exactly.
Kind of like that? Yeah, exactly.
Like that. And, you know, it was what was hard in trying to decide, okay, how should I work with this? I was looking, okay, what's the conversation here? You know, what is ego telling me? But the thing I was struggling with is I wasn't having an experience of any self-hating voices, anyone telling me. It was just sort of I felt so identified with the person who felt like you're, you know, and it was triggered by an awkward social interaction. So it was like I just felt truly like the person who believed that they were awkward and awful, and this was to explain for so many things. And so I was sort of unsure where to go with practice in terms of, you know, trying to work with the way that I was feeling with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, it makes perfect sense. So do you have a recording and listening practice?
I do.
Okay. And do you do the two-handed recording?
I tried it yesterday. It's not one of the – it's one I've only tried that a few times.
Okay. Well, that I think would be the one. So that's that place where imagine that that person who was in that situation is your best friend, your whomever you love unconditionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened. That happened to her. The way those kinds of things happen to all of us, right? They're just one of those situations. And she feels awful about it. And so you're going to turn on that recorder, put it in your right hand, and you're going to let her talk about how awful she feels, how embarrassing, how humiliating, how horrible, how everything. Okay? And then you're gonna listen to her. You know, you put that recorder in the other hand, and listen to what she has to say, and then you're going to give her the wisdom, love, and compassion that's going to help her get through that.
I did try that a bit yesterday because I had a sense that in a case like this, that might be the And, you know, I was struggling a bit to imagine her. I was so identified, you know, with feeling her vulnerability and her anxiety about this and what it meant that I was looking, I think, to reassure her on the content, which I felt like I couldn't do because I was still partially believing, yep, all these things, they might be true about you. I don't know what to tell you. But what helped, I did end up, you know, being released from it some is that, as I started to, you know, try to figure out what to do and do the two-hand recording or listen to some old recordings, I felt the me who, you know, wants to figure out how I'm going to fix this takeover, and I do, you know, have practiced working more with that. And so, you know, I...
And let's stop right there. We have more practice working with that aspect of ego.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's we know that's not centered either, right?
Right.
Okay, you've got this problem, and so, you know, we feel a lot of sympathy for this person, but she's still messed up. Okay, so what are we going to do about her? So we can just watch it, right? If it changed outfits, it would be really handy, right? So there it is in that outfit, and then you see something, and it just shifts over there, puts on a different outfit, starts talking with a different, now it's pretty sympathetic. And, I mean, this really is a problem. But, I'm sure you can figure out what to do about it if we, you know, really, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing that is true about awareness practice that I think, well, among the 180,000 most difficult aspects is that we are so deeply, deeply conditioned to believe that we need to change. That no matter how often we hear someone say, there's nothing wrong with you, we can say it back. I know there's nothing wrong. I know there's nothing wrong with me, but. And that's where it gets us. Because what happens with that is that we leave awareness practice then because we want awareness practice to to fix us.
All right.
Okay, so I got this now. I see. So now I want to be different. And
mm-hmm.
that's one of the biggest hurdles for us. And it's a hurdle that we don't want to try to get over. Right? That's one of those places where we just turn around and walk off. Because this, what you're having a chance to see in this is how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate controls you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's valuable. Not never being in a situation where you do something unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So in awareness practice, so there is that system operating in you, right? So there's somebody who, you weren't there, right? You went unconscious, let's face it. And whatever it was happened, and that happened. And then there's all that means and how you're supposed to feel, how you're supposed to feel about yourself, what you're supposed to do. All of that karma is in place. And with awareness practice, we really want to see that. Because the first thing that is true, at least for me, and I think it's true universally, is that everything that happens to us in life is an opportunity to choose unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what it is, right? So every time we are offered something in life and we don't go to unconditional love and acceptance, then we know, okay, this is a place I need to bring a lot of attention. Because this is a place where suffering happens, and what we're doing is ending suffering.
And so I'm bringing attention to it. I'm not, you know, when it's there and I'm feeling this way, I'm not trying to distract from it.
Nope.
I'm doing the two-handed recordings. I'm sticking with it even when it doesn't feel like I know exactly what to do with it.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And this is just kind of one of those slightly off to the side but really important places. The fastest way out of the dark room is to try to explore the dark room.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. You're, I don't know, is humiliated, is that a good word to describe?
Well, no, I don't. Actually, nothing even happened yesterday. I was just, you know, quieter, and I wasn't feeling like I was fitting in. And so, no, I just left with a sense of, like, you know, you could have connected more. You could have, you know. So no,
there wasn't even
like a social gap or anything. It was just feeling like, you're not fitting in. You're not,
yeah. So there is that way of feeling. You act a particular way because you feel that way. I feel quiet. I don't really feel like interact. Whatever it is that's going on. Right? And then, again, there's all that karmic meaning attached to it so that
mm-hmm.
you can then be criticized and beat up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to explore. So you want what we want to do is find another situation where that can happen to you again as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in that situation and you're feeling that quiet and a little bit unto yourself or whatever it is, you know, you're really paying attention. What are the sensations? What are the labels? What are the beliefs that go with it? What's the meaning? So I'm behaving in a particular way. What's causing that? And it's not a figuring out. It's not an intellectual. It's an awareness, right?
Yeah.
You're just paying really, really close attention, right? And then you'll see it. You'll realize how that is being held in place. And then you can do a little check mark. Right? It's not that it won't come back again, because it will. And it won't. It's not that it won't slip over and get in a different outfit and try to get you somewhere else. But that's the attitude of mind that we want to bring to it. So you're in a big, great big giant advanced education course here. And these are the classes. This is the material that we work with. And because we want to end suffering, we'd like to move through this as quickly as possible. So rather than avoiding difficult situations, we actually want to put ourselves in difficult situations so that we can let go of what is making it difficult, because it's not, it's just that we're being told that it is, we want to let go of that as quickly as possible so that we're free.
I can see that. I can, because yesterday when this was, you know, when I was in this situation, I started to feel the conversation sending me pings of what the problems were, and I kind of abandoned myself while I was there, and then, you know, just let it build and build until I got home and felt awful, and so I can see the difference that could be made if I was willing to look at it when it started to happen, when I was in the situation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we get so crazy that at a certain point, depending on who you're with and that sort of thing, you'll even talk about it. Wow, mm-hmm. I'm just watching myself kind of being withdrawn and feeling like I don't belong and not participating. So, yeah, it's really interesting to watch. And probably people will raise their eyebrows or roll their eyes or be interested, depending on who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, you'll be acknowledging it instead of letting it have power over you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's pretty exciting,
isn't
it?
It is. That's very helpful.
It
is. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Take care. Keep me posted.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Lauren. Fabulous conversation, Sherry. I loved all of that. Lots to explore there.
We can put that on the end of what Rochelle and Lakota were talking about, right? There are some other things. We're going to build this whole little whatever it is of different things to do under these circumstances just to see what happens.
Yes, and I was thinking as Lauren spoke that it reminded me of Rochelle's conversation, and what kept coming up for me with Rochelle was meaning. What is the meaning that conditioning is putting on here? And so Rochelle was sort of teasing that out with the process. It's like, here's the facts, and then here's the story or the meaning. And I got the sense that's what you and Lauren were looking at there. What is the meaning that's being added here?
Yeah, yeah. What is it that's there that we're not supposed to be paying attention to? Because what we're supposed to be paying attention to, according to the voices, according to ego, is what's going to keep us stuck in suffering. That's what we're supposed to attend to, right? What we're not supposed to be attending to is what's going to free us. So we know which choice we're going to make.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Joan in Berkeley.
Hello, Joan.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. I'm doing great.
Hi.
The weather is stunning down here as well.
I know. A butterfly just flew past my window. Oh, my gosh. We are so lucky, aren't we? Okay,
we are.
Go ahead.
So, I'm trying to, well, figure something out, which I probably shouldn't be doing. But, you know, after being away from practice for a while, I jumped into practice with, I kind of jumped into the deep end of the pool. And, you know, I started with, you know, the 5-day retreat. And then I was doing the email class and the Project Joy. And awareness coaching, and I had this period of 5 days where I was going from euphoria to rage and everything in between, and having these mini workshops on impatience, which I was working on in the Socratic email class, and kindness, which was the topic of a few assignments in the Project Joy class. And it was just a very intense 5 days. and there was spaciness involved, and there was some period of time where all I could think about was practice. And it was like I felt like there was some benefit to being on autopilot because I almost felt like I couldn't function. So do you have any idea what was happening there if I was making myself clear?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
So what occurred to me, you know, you said you jumped into the deep end of the pool, and I would have said you're actually in the kiddie pool.
Feels like the deep end to me.
I know.
Like
and conditioning would like you to believe that, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is that you arranged for yourself so much support that
yeah.
there was no way that you were going to go under. There's just no way. But what was going mm-hmm. under is conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going at you with everything it's got.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you're not giving it any any respite. And so
really?
Autopilot, you know, it's it manages periodically to be able to put you to sleep so that it can get
yeah.
a little bit of time to regroup and maybe make a move against you, right? But then about that time, you know, here's the 9 o'clock and there's Project Joy and you're on and you're right back here. You know, then it's time for your coaching. Then it's time for open air. Then it's time for, right? And conditioning is getting frantic. It's getting hysterical. Like, would you
mm-hmm.
stop? Would you take a break? So when we finished the Socratic email class, I don't know if I wrote this to everybody or said it. I don't know. It all runs together. But if I could go into everybody's house and have a little 5-minute conversation, wouldn't even take, be like a minute and a half, right? What I would say
mm-hmm.
is do not listen to a voice that says you need to take a break. That you've been working really hard, this has been really intense, and now you need to have a rest. Because what that rest actually means is, from ego, I really need you to go unconscious for a while so I can regroup. And that's what we
mm-hmm.
don't want to do, right? So when we're feeling that way, what we want to do is get more support.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to use recording and listening with this, but the feelings at one point were so intense, I didn't know what to do with it.
Well, you can, yeah, okay. So I know, and sometimes in the moment it's kind of hard to get that support. But here's what I would suggest. Okay, you
mm-hmm.
get out your recorder, and it's what we were just talking about with Lauren. You get out your recorder and you start in. Wow, these feelings are really intense, which is interesting in itself. As soon as we start to break it down, what the heck does that mean anyway? You know, we seldom get to be around long enough with them to figure it out because that's code for go unconscious. Get away from this feeling, right? So what does that actually mean? Well, let's see. Okay, and you can do this in a number of ways. So, all right, I'm going to start with my feet and work up. Are my feet okay? Yeah. Legs? Yeah. Okay. Lower abdomen? Lower back? Yeah. Okay. A little higher there, third chakra. Tension, tightness. Uh-huh. Okay. Let's breathe into that. All right. Yeah. Okay. Now, tension, tightness, what is that? And so when I breathe into it, what happens there? Well, okay. All right. Then moving on up, lungs. Chest, heart, again, kind of tight. All right. This big breath. Let that go. Okay. Shoulders. Oh, yeah, they're up around my ears. Okay. Let's drop those. And breathing. And then you can stop and look. Where's the intense feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
Actually, it's not there. But in that length of time, you look, huh. Well, actually, it's not there. It'll probably be back. But you'll know
mm-hmm.
where to look. Yeah? So
mm-hmm.
there's something
mm-hmm.
that's holding that, in quotes, intense feeling in place. something that goes mm-hmm. on that causes you to go into that story. And, of course, that story means it's too much. You just can't mm-hmm. be present to this. You've got to do something. So we know ego's whole hue and cry is do something. You've got to do something. But so one of my one of the most interesting experiences in my whole awareness practice venture was when I first had a panic attack. And now I've been practicing for a long time when I first had a panic mm-hmm. attack. This was actually mm-hmm. before recording and listening, but I knew about self-hate and those kinds of things. So I started having this panic attack. And have you ever had one?
No.
Well, yeah, talk about a talk about an intense feeling, okay?
Yeah, my husband
died. Yeah, so what I decided to do is lie down on the floor. And so I just went into a, you know, arms out to, straight out at my sides and legs, so I'm a like a starfish, right? And to just lie there and relax into the floor and see what a panic attack felt like.
Hmm.
And it was over, actually, before I had a chance really to find out what it felt like.
Hmm.
I mean, it was there long enough that, you know, I knew it was a panic attack, right?
Yeah.
And I watched what went on in the head, you know, trying to pin it to something, right? Is it is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Maybe it's, you know, and it was obvious that it wasn't anything. It was just
yeah.
And so to be in that kind of attitude of mind with whatever is going on takes us immediately out of relationship with whatever it is in the way we're supposed to be in relationship with it. Now it's really working for you. I mean, I was never afraid of a panic attack after that. In fact, I kind of wished that I would have more of them because a lot of people have panic attacks. I want to know, what does that feel like? What's going on there? What?
You're saying to go into the body? Is that basically
yes,
what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
okay.
Because that's how it's being held in place, right?
Okay.
There are sensations. There's there's what people call a feeling, right? There are sensations, and there's a label that goes with that and a story that goes with it. And we're immediately meant to – this is why so many people are out of touch with their bodies, of course,
mm-hmm.
Because you're immediately supposed to go up into your head – to be told what you're experiencing and how you should feel about that and what it means about you and what you now have to do. And that's the last place we want to be because that's not where anything is happening except the big story that we find out is actually a lie.
Okay.
So we get back into the body, right? And then what? What is going on here? So when people are, you know, it's a panic attack, it's anxiety, it's fear, it's dread, it's all of those things, well, where is that? Because there's actually nothing happening to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, I can tell she's on it.
I'm looking forward to my next bout of fury or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now with fury, of course, that's a really interesting one. Because how can you let all of that energy, all of those sensations come up? What are the stories? What are the labels? What do you have to do? What are you supposed to do with this? And how do you need to feel about yourself afterwards? But what if it's just energy? What if it's just energy? What if you could just dance?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Been very helpful.
Good. All right.
Thank you very much.
Let me know.
All right.
Okay, you're welcome.
Good night. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Joan. Another fascinating conversation, Sherry. And I got the sense as you were describing going through the body from the feet and then the legs up that mm-hmm. you just weren't going to believe the story. There was just no, right. as much as conditioning wanted to convince you, you were looking for the evidence, and there actually wasn't any.
There wasn't any. Yeah.
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 Yes.
My other favorite one of those that I think I talked about in the Fear book is the that same kind of just hysterical, the voice is trying to convince me that this is a premonition, something awful is going to happen, the world is going to come to an end,
yes.
just all these wild
yes.
stories, and I had food poisoning.
Yes.
That was it. Pretty soon it became
yeah.
obvious that those sensations were not about the world coming to an end. It felt like mine was coming to an end, but not everybody else's.
Yes, and the thing you pointed out in that book is that the story distracted you from what was actually going on.
Yeah.
And that's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's that thing, Michael, where we are meant to go with what conditioned mind is telling us, and the reason for that is that's what will keep karma, ego, conditioning in place. As soon
yes.
as we turn our attention to what's actually happening, drop the story, get to what's actually happening, now we've moved into freedom. Not good
yes.
for ego.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but good for us.
Very good for us. Very good for us, yeah.
Yes. Sherry, we are going to break to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that we could live in a conversation about what is true, what is real, what is arising in life in the moment, instead of with the voices of karmic conditioning. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We now have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report finding refuge in my own voice, strengthening the awareness of the mentor, and experiencing the 6 weeks as transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply go to livingcompassion.org. Click on Practice to find 2017 programs and then Recording and Listening Training. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence this year with the support of Recording and Listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have more callers here.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. It's Gabriel. Long time no speak.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Gabriel.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. I also want to send a big, big, huge gosho to everyone doing the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. I did that one, I think, a year or two ago, and it's very courageous.
Good one, isn't
and
it?
Beautiful work. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing
mm-hmm.
one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I want to talk about within the world of the Sangha that we've created in this practice, it's relatively easy to kind of navigate things because we're all like intending for waking up and ending suffering within the Sangha.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as you kind of step outside of that world, things can start to change because, everybody's intending different things. So there's
yes.
we've been using the word refuge a lot. So there's like a refuge in the Sangha, and it feels very cozy, very warm, very beautiful. But then right outside of that, it's quite frankly, for me, it's a little scary because people can be, what's the word? They can be scary. They can be scary. That's the word. Because so that's one of the edges of my practice. Like I'm working with relating with people who don't practice or who are not particularly interested in waking up and ending suffering and all that stuff. So I was wondering if we could converse a little bit about that and if you had any thoughts on it.
Yes. Oh, you know I do. So
of course you do.
The thing that I like to point out in a situation like this is that there aren't any other people. Okay, that's one of those, takes a while for us to get it, that's the case. But once we do,
yeah.
Oh my goodness gracious, the doors of freedom that open up. Okay, so people aren't scary. You get frightened. So you being scared is not the same as people are scary. Which, understanding that, brings us back to, I'm working out my own salvation diligently, and everything that happens in my life is part of the curriculum. So I encounter somebody, and I watch a fear reaction come up in me, which, as we know, fear, ego, synonyms, right? So I know what's there, right? Because life isn't afraid. And when we're at center, we're not afraid. So I've left center, and now I'm identified with ego, and there's fear. So with that fear, there's a story. Right, so that person is XYZ, and this could happen, and what if that, and that's going to mean that. And so, again, if I'm, you know, back with where Lauren was, you're in that situation, and instead of going to conditioned mind to try to save you from this, you just watch. Well, that's really interesting. So what's the fear here? What's the story? What do I think this person is going to do to me?
Yeah, I think this has been going on for most of my life, or that I've been very frightened of people, because I think I have some imprints from things that happened, and I'm sort of projecting that whatever happened in my past will reoccur, like being yelled at or being, you know, all that
yep.
kind of stuff. Yeah, so for a long time, I wasn't experiencing that, and I had this sort of like pseudo confidence, and I wasn't afraid. But I recently did a 7-day silent retreat, and this sort of like reopened up for me, where now I see people, and it's amazing. Like, you know, the way they hold their face, or the way they you know, look, or the way they breathe, or anything can sort of like scare me. I feel like I'm a little 3-year-old or 4-year-old again. And I have a recording listening practice. I feel that I'm missing sort of like a somatic, like a body type connection, because I can hear myself speaking to myself, but it's not really kinesthetically reaching me, like what I'm saying.
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah.
Yes. So somebody holds their face in a particular way. First of all, you know, if you kept custody of the eyes, that wouldn't be a problem. But somebody holds
yeah.
their face in a certain way, and if you're present, you will watch what happens in you that gives you a meaning about that. Okay? Now
it reminds me of stuff.
Well, yeah, don't do that. Because
don't remember?
Because well, what you're saying is you look to conditioned mind. Conditioned mind gives you a story, and then you go from there. So if we're paying attention, so the person is scowling. Okay, that reminds me of the way my father scowled. And he was such and such and so and so, and that happened and that happened. That's just a story. Okay, that's what we're learning not to do. We don't go to conditioned mind to explain life to us, because conditioned mind is only going to explain egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate to us. So it loves that story about your father and how that happened, and because that's its world, right? That's what makes it seem to be real. It's getting all the attention, right? So that's what we're learning not to do, because it's never going to lead anywhere except to suffering.
No, that's very clear now.
Yeah, because there's nothing about the look on somebody's face that means anything.
So,
the guy could have a stomachache.
I agree. You made a really quick comment that if I kept custody of the eyes, that wouldn't be an issue. And I agree, and I practice custody of the eyes more than ever, especially after the There's Nothing Wrong With Your retreat, because I learned it there. But the other thing is you also recommend sometimes to pursue what you fear so that you can become aware of those sensations and kind of work with it. So
yeah.
Is there such a thing as doing that too much in your understanding? Because I feel like I'm constantly seeking to find things that frighten me.
No. All we do is open ourselves. We're not letting conditioned mind track down things for us. No. If that's what anybody understood, that was definitely not what I was saying. Life will offer us all the opportunities that we need to face everything that we need to face. We don't need to let conditioned mind pursue it. No. Because if we're doing that, conditioned mind has already put the spin on it. It's already saying, this is what you're afraid of. Here's an example of that. This is why you're afraid of it. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's extremely pervasive and very, very subtle.
Yes. Yes. And I could get in trouble for saying this kind of thing, but you could have gone on a fear retreat with us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to get in trouble for saying that. I agree. I think that in that retreat, it was absolute silence. And what happened was that I was doing that pursuing kind of like my fears, and it actually triggered psychosis.
Oh, of course. Of course it does. Of course it does. Gabriel, the number of people that I have talked to in the last few decades who specialized in 30-day silent retreats and quit meditating as a result of it. You know, if you don't have the tools, well, if you don't have the tools to deal with what's going on, then it's just not helpful. It's just not helpful. There's nothing in silence that is automatically going to bring liberation. It's a process. It's a part of a whole process. Yeah?
Without
that whole process, then we're just left. For many people, all that happens is they're left meditating with self-hate. And after a while, it becomes something
exactly
that's intolerable. And so they quit.
For me, what happened was I kind of shattered because the pressure of the self-hate was so intense. I wasn't seeing it at the time, but it just kind of broke me. So, I guess that's, I just had this idea that the silence being my true nature had sort of like a benevolence to it, which I can sort of project onto the silence. But sometimes it's that tug of war where conditioning is so strong that I
That's
do
right.
need the support. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And the good thing about this, Gabriel, now you know that.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that's
I
right.
Do.
Right? That's back to that same thing. So this is not self-improvement. We have experiences. We learn from them. We see them. And we go on from there. So now you know. 7 days of silence might not be a good thing for you right now. Someday it might be the perfect thing because you have all the tools that you need to be able to actually be present to the silence instead of present to self-hate.
That makes perfect sense. I think I'm a little ahead of myself here. Yeah.
Yeah. There, you know, excitement and willingness, you know, they're worse traits to have. But we want to temper those with support.
Wisdom.
Guidance.
Yeah.
Yeah, wisdom. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sherry.
Good to hear your voice.
Enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. Another fabulous conversation, Sherry. A lot of willingness and excitement, as you said. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we just see how even that will be used against us by ego every chance it gets. Everything. That's what we talk about constantly, that conditioning will use everything against us. We can just know that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we're at about 5:56. Would you like to have another brief conversation? Or
oh, let's try it, Michael. Let's try it. What the heck? As long, we'll know that we have a limited time, and we'll just do our best.
Okay, great. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Who is this?
I don't know. It's Heather from Portland.
Hey,
hi, Heather.
Hi.
This is a rough time, isn't it?
Show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just calling to get some guidance. My dad is really sick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just having a hard time kind of navigating through all of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What feels like let's see, I'm going to try to ask this question as clearly as I possibly can. Because your father is really sick, which is really true, and that's one situation. And then I project it's what conditioning is doing to you that is the other part of the situation. Lots of unhelpful conversations, in other words.
I mean, yes, of course, because there's a lot of fear and a lot of worry, but I feel like, I think the way, I don't know if it's conditioning or just, like, wanting to go through this with, like, cherishing, like, the time that I have with him and honoring him and letting him know, like, how much I love him and how grateful I am and, like, I just don't know, like, what I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a pretty good program. Right? What I hear in that is you want to love him, and you want him to know how much you love him, and you want to enjoy every minute that you have with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what are the tears about then?
I'm just so sad. Like, I just feel so sad. Like, I feel so, just sad. I mean, it's weird because I think I'm really sad for myself. I miss him. I want to call him and text him all day long, every day. And I also don't want to scare him, or, like, I want, I'm just really overcome with sadness, I think, and
okay.
For my whole family.
So, Heather, you're a practitioner, and you got a lot of other things going for you at the same time, like what you do for a living and all of those kinds of things. So I'm going to just kind of cut to the chase here with you, if that's okay, since we're down to the hour. Okay? So your assignment, should you choose to accept it, is to look at how much ego is taking advantage of this situation to cause you to suffer. Okay? Because he's still with us. He's still here. Right? And what you want is to love him. And I would imagine your mother at the same time. Right? Because the fact that your father has this situation going on doesn't mean that all of the other people in your life aren't just as worthy of being loved in the same way and appreciated. True?
Yeah.
Yes. But ego wants us to say, oh, but this. And then you have to be really upset about this. Not, wow, you really need to get that heart open and keep it open, because there's a whole lot of loving that you're going to want to be attending to now and for the rest of your life. Not the rest of his life, the rest of your life. You see the difference?
I do, and I think I understand that intellectually, but I don't know how to, I don't know how to do that.
Okay, let's do this. Let's do a simple little exercise that you'll be able to practice with. Imagine that the tables are turned. Imagine the tables are turned. You have this diagnosis, and there's your father. He's perfectly healthy, and you have a diagnosis. How do you want him to be? Do you want him to become completely miserable and paralyzed and lost in sadness over what's happening to you? Or do you want him to use this as an opportunity to get in touch with the unconditional love that is actually his nature? To become the most loving person that he can be for you, right? Heart open, loving, appreciating, joyful that you exist for however long you exist. Yeah, loving toward everybody else. Which would you want?
Yeah. That one.
Yeah. So we do know. We do know. Yeah. And conditioning really wants us not to, because as difficult as it is for us to get, and usually we can't until we find ourselves in a situation like the one you're in, ego wants you to suffer. Not to be sad, not to feel pain, not to be afraid, no, to suffer. And it's going to do everything that it can all day long, every day, to bring you right back to that place of maximum suffering. And I can promise you, it's not what your dad wants for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants it for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's tough. I'm not saying it's not a tough assignment. I'm not. But I'm just saying that you can do it.
I know.
Yeah, because this is the other thing. This is where, you know, guilt can play a part. I'm mostly kidding about that, but in a way it's true. You don't want him to add you to the things that he is distressed about right now.
Right. Totally.
Yeah, what he needs right now is people around him who can actually take care of themselves, and that's going to be really important, not ignore themselves, right? But really take care of themselves so that they can be completely available and he doesn't have to worry about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Now, stay close, okay?
Okay.
Because we got to keep having these talks, all right?
Okay, thank you.
You are so welcome. Take good care of her, the best care you can, better than you ever have. All right.
I will.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Heather. Wow.
Gosh.
Wow.
Life is something, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. And you know, for Heather and for all the rest of us, you know, these are the times that we practice for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is why we're doing this. This is why we're attempting to free ourselves as completely as we can from that hateful system in the head so that we can actually be here, so that we can be as unconditionally loving as we can possibly be, because really, really, really difficult stuff is going to happen. If it's not happening right now, the odds are really good that it's going to happen unless we go first. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, those are the choices,
yes.
Right? It's either us or everybody we love. And so it's not like it's not going to happen, and it's not like now isn't the absolute perfect time to be getting as prepared as we can possibly be. And the way to be
mm-hmm.
prepared is to get here. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Thank you, Sherry.
And I don't think I'm going to talk to you next week, but I think open air is going to happen, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, you take care and have the maximum amount of good time. And we'll talk to you as soon as we can.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.